Okay, I'm sure you've all heard by now the vast majority of all fist fights actually end up turning into a ground fight. And it's a reality that all self-protection enthusiasts have had to come to terms with in order to train the correct way. This has been a challenge for traditional martial artists because of segregation within the industry. I mean, a lot of styles are either predominantly a stand-up style or they're a grappling style, but hardly ever do you see a lot of mixing of both of them. But even for reality-based practitioners, learning how to defend yourself on the ground can be just as challenging because many of the training options found focus mainly on mixed martial arts, and they still have largely a lot of limitations that are designed for sport application. Hello, everyone. This is Jeff Anderson, President of the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants, and our focus in this exclusive webinar presentation is to uncover the real truth behind what it really takes to master the ground fight when it comes to a real street fight, one that can really have deadly consequences. And I'm excited to have joining us someone who knows this combat zone all too well, Damian Ross. Damian, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Now, Damian is a fourth-degree black belt in Tekken Ryu Combat Jiu-Jitsu, a second-degree black belt in Kodokan Judo.
Yep.
And a second-degree black belt in Taekwondo. That one I can get right. But besides his traditional training in martial arts, Damian was a college and hometown Hall of Fame wrestler, and this background gives him a unique perspective on this topic that we're going to be covering today. Now, in his transition to a more combative approach, Damian's training has been rapidly catching the eye of several government agencies for its effectiveness, and he served as consultant and instructor to departments like the United States Secret Service, the United States Federal Marshals, and the Post Office, to name just a few. His self-defense training system is currently being implemented by instructors and commanders in the United States Marine Corps, the United States Homeland Security, and the United States Army Combatives Training Centers as well. And he's developed an incredible train-at-home program that's developed a global network of self-defense company training centers, professional instructors, and trainers. And I've seen these training videos that you can have access to, and they are incredible. I mean, a lot of people just put out stuff.
Thank you so
on
much.
Video. Now, Damian, I truly mean this. These things, you put a lot of work into these things, and it really shows.
Yeah.
Now, for everyone out there, for more information about Damian and his training opportunities, please visit his website at www.selfdefensetrainingsystem.com. Now, Damian, I'm really excited about this interview because we always get a lot of questions about ground fighting here, but really, I'm interested in your advice, particularly because not only do you have an extensive close combat background, but you're an accomplished wrestler as well. And since wrestling is such a popular school sport and college sport, it's really not uncommon to find yourself, if somebody is in a, you know, let's face it, we're not all walking down in the ghetto and being carjacked by gangbangers, but a lot of times it just ends up being the fight in the bar or the fight on the street, the fight in the parking lot with the average person that's out there. And a lot of people that went to school, it is a popular sport. Wrestling is a popular sport. And this really programs them for fighting this way. So it's not uncommon to come up against somebody and be fighting somebody that does have some sort of wrestling skills. What I want to start off with is in learning how you really need to fight to win a ground fight. For you, what was the biggest surprise that you found in relation to the traditional type training that you'd been learning, including the martial arts, but in particular the wrestling, and where you've taken ground fighting combatives in your approach and how you train today?
Well, there's not a the first thing I noticed was there's not a position that doesn't leave somebody vulnerable, be it wrestling, judo, or jiu-jitsu background. You know, you can always have access to, you know, the vital targets that we all know and love, the face, the, you know, the testicles, the groin. You can, that was the first and foremost. For every wrestler moving from wrestling to submission type of martial arts, you know, we're always susceptible to submissions. And that's where a lot of people get hung up, is really, you know, they're focusing on trying to learn submissions and tapping guys out and learning strangles and arm bars. But we found that in reality, you actually don't even need a lot of that stuff. Because once you're in the position to do a strangle, you're in a position to do a lot worse to them.
Yeah, so, and it seems like there is a lot of, again, if we talk a lot about programming the mind and things like that in our training, and if you are an established wrestler, if you have some sort of skills like that,
you're going to go to your training.
You're going to go to your training, right.
And that includes playing by the rules. That also includes, I mean, there's three things that we tell people when, you know, we start. Don't go to the ground if you don't have to. So never choose the ground, wind up on the ground. The other is to have a sense of urgency because you want to end this as quickly as possible. And staying on the ground, you know, leaves you more susceptible to weapons, multiple assailants, and you're getting beat up by the ground as well. I mean, it's not a soft mat. Lying on a hardwood floor and start rolling around there and see how you feel afterwards. Lastly, always improve your position. So if you're on your back, you want to turn and face him. If you're, you know, if he's in the mount, then you want to go to the guard. Then you want to go to your feet. You know, and you want to get off the ground as quickly as possible. What happens with the combat sports is that they teach you to wait. There's not a lot of sense of urgency. You know, you're just biding your time, looking for openings. Waiting, and you're trained to operate within the rules. So you'll always pass up those, you know, certain opportunities to end the situation, you know, in a choice for, you know, looking for a submission, looking for a pin, and just holding down and controlling them. The positive benefits from training in those types of arts is that they do teach you gaining positions of dominance. You get inoculated to being in that position, besides all the physical benefits that are obvious to it. But after learning position, after learning how to how a body moves, and learning what positions are going to put you in more trouble and which ones aren't, there's not too much, technically, there's not too much you need. I think we're very all impressed in martial arts and self-defense training with techniques. You know, everything is very technique-oriented. The main thing that we do, we're tactic and strategy-oriented, so when you have those types of, when you have those strategies and you understand a, you know, specific way of thinking, then you can plug yourself into any situation.
Yeah. Well, it seems like even before getting to technique, there seems to be a real mental blockade.
Yep. Are you there, Jeff?
Still there?
Okay, yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I dropped my phone, everybody, so that's what was the loud, okay. That was the loud thud. It wasn't some close combat sneak ninja attack.
That wasn't the blockade?
No, it wasn't the blockade. That was my own technical blockade. There really is kind of this mental block, I think, and a lot of it does come down to what you talked about. You know, you get programmed into being able to take your time, and a lot of relearning how to get out of all this stuff, because there are a lot of dangers for being on the ground. I'm sure we're going to get into what some of those are as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there's I've got a question here that I kind of want to lead us down the road here. This is
sure.
From Larry from Round Rock, Texas,
mm-hmm.
And his question is. In teaching effective applications for fighting, we always need to cover the ground. When I do it, I focus not on power but on physical weakness, spooning the eye, grappling the ear, hooking the genitals with the thumb, etc. Now I'm used to fighting from my feet. Do you find these painful attacks effective on seasoned ground fighters? I know that that work on the average Joe, but just do not have the experience with ground fighters to say. Are they prepared for these sorts of dirty fighting moves? And I guess where I want to first start out with his question is more on the how do you unlearn the things that you learned as a wrestler when you work with people in combatives, and even those that have never done wrestling in school, there's this mental hesitancy to, as Larry puts it, hook the genitals with your thumb.
Absolutely. You know, we have people that have problems spraying pepper spray.
Yeah.
Even though they're even just using an inert trainer. we focus a lot on training on dummies and targets. I mean, you know, the training dummies that are available now are awesome, just because, you know, you don't have to go down to Home Depot and start constructing these things like we, you know, used to have to several years ago. When they're focusing, the more real the target, the more it starts, you know, it starts conditioning them to do it. So that's the first place to start. And with that, you know, with the train at home program, that's what we focus on. A lot of times, you know, we say like training partners start to get in a way because people, we don't want to hurt other people. I mean, we're not, you know, we're not sociopaths, you know, and that's a good thing. But, you know, when you want to train in a way and practice in a way so that when you're under stress, it just takes over and you react and you're not thinking about it. You know, when you're in a learning situation, when you're in a training environment, it's very difficult. I mean, we can do things to kind of create that urgency, but especially for beginners, the more, you know, inanimate the object, the better off they're going to be. They have no problems hitting a dummy. You know, they'll have issues grabbing, grabbing the face of a training partner. After a while, you start to get used to it because you understand, you know, what your control is going to be and how much pressure you really need to be, and that you're not going to touch them and they're not going to fall apart. But at the same time, when you're training with the dummies, it's funny because you do have to be careful. Because if you're just doing, really intense dummy training and then you go grab somebody, you know, you may grab them a little too hard.
Yeah.
One of the questions that Larry brought up was with regards to, okay, you know, will this work against, you know, will these things work against a seasoned fighter? Well, you know, you poke anybody, you grab anybody's nuts, it's going to hurt. You know, they're not, one of the things is they're really not expecting it, so you're going to get a reaction out of them. I mean, overall body toughness and training, yeah, they're going to be tougher than your average Joe, no doubt. We can say the same thing for professional football players and other professional, you know, athletes. But, you know, when we're operating in that, you know, adrenaline-induced state, you know, and there, because, you know, it's not a controlled environment, so you know, they're going to be taken out of their element, too. I mean, I love always use the I don't know if you remember the Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson press conference, you know, years and years ago, when Mike, if we were all officially confirmed, went off the deep end. But, you know, they got into a fight. You know, they weren't boxing. I mean, Tyson was swinging for the fences, trying to rip his head off. He wound up biting him in the thigh. Not too much boxing there. Well, maybe for Mike Tyson. You know,
yeah.
Tendency to bite guys. But you know, that adrenaline takes them out of their element. And they're not practicing. You know, you poke anybody now, you're going to get the same reaction that you do if someone, you know, untrained. In fact, most of the times it's, you know, someone who has experience is going to give you the right type of feel and reaction. They're going to move in a strange way. I mean, in a particular way that's familiar to you if you're training a lot. Some of the worst things we see this in judo and wrestling, is when you start, and heck, you would see it in sparring, someone who doesn't know anything comes in there and is freaked out of their mind. You know, a lot of guys, they don't even want to deal with them because they're giving, you know, you're giving such reactions, you know, such, you know, strange reactions that, you know, you're inadvertently, you know, yourself getting, you know, you'll get hit in the nuts, you'll get punched in the face because, you know, they are, you know, giving you, you know, some realism. That's what we would say, like when we were, you know, years ago when we were training, it was like, okay, you know, it works against the guy who knows what to do and what to expect. Go do this on somebody who, you know, go grab the new guy and now see what happens.
Yeah.
And you're going to get, you know, you're going to all of a sudden, you know, tailor what you do to, you know, to handle that. So in a lot of cases, the person who is untrained is, you know, more dangerous than the person who is because they don't have those checks in. They don't have that type of training. They don't know when to stop. You know, they're not, you know, they're just going to be going berserk And that's, you know, and that's very, very difficult to deal with. And that's part of, you know, we focus on that type of common denominator, you know, worst case scenario type of training.
Yeah. And do you find that it's an easy mental leap for people that do train with you in this, because they do have to check themselves as they become more experienced? And this is almost like there's like an inconsistency in maybe what we're talking about here, in that if I'm well trained and I know what to do, I know to go to the groin, I know to go to the eyes, but I know I'm trained enough to check myself now. When it comes time when I'm rumbling around on the barroom floor, do you find that it's a very, like, it's easy to kind of jump out of that? Okay, I know where to go, but now I don't have to check myself. Do you find that, do you drill that into people's minds where it's an automatic program?
Yes, and that comes from training and practice. With, you know, the best analogy I can use is the guard dog. I mean, you know, you've got dog, you know, we've all, you know, have dogs or had dogs, and, you know, your dog, he plays with everybody, plays with the kids. He's nice, you can pet him, you know, no problem. But when it's time to get down to business, he goes. And that's it. You know, when you're training, and that's why the training that we do is very, you know, oriented on, you know, hitting and moving and actually getting that, you know, feedback and developing the power and the strength and the confidence from, you know, hitting something. And that, you know, once it's done and you go through it, you know, when the time comes, it's just, you know, it is flick the switch, and, you know, you're not going to be able to, if you decide to engage, you're going to go, you know, full bore. If you're not, which is fine, you're going to leave. You know, the choice is up to you, and everybody always has a choice until you don't have one anymore. Guess what, I'm the Yogi Berra of self-defense. But, you know, that being said, you know, once, you know, if you, and you, that only comes from, you know, practicing in a particular manner, you know, when it's time to go, you go. You know, but it's, you know, and again, Jeff, there's no guarantees because, you know from your experience, I mean, you know, there's guys that go through the, you know, the same training, and, you know, when it comes time, you know, some guys, you know, fall apart.
Yeah.
Other guys move forward. You know, it. You know, I've seen, you know, you've seen guys get injured, and, you know, one guy can barely, you know, one guy, you know, dislocates a finger, he's out. The other guy can barely walk, he wants to continue. So, you know, your will to survive and your desire, you know, is, you know, counts, you know, so much towards your success, but you need to channel that, you know, in order to, you know, you need a way to channel that in order to, in order to, you know, increase your chances.
Yeah, and you know what? Somebody actually submitted a question that speaks directly to what you just said. I'm going to bring that up in a little bit. But one
sure.
of the things that I wanted to go back to something you said a little bit earlier in some of the things that you try and get across to people, and that is about kind of making that decision, if you even have a decision, to go down to the ground. The reason I ask that is because people have, as they become educated in ground fighting, that you should be, like Larry said, you know, now we understand that we need to focus on ground fighting because it is a reality that we have to deal with. And when people, as I said in my introduction, a lot of people have become educated because of things like mixed martial arts, Ultimate Fighting Championship, Pride, things like that, where the people who learned to really dominate there were ones that could dominate on the ground. And so people have now started training more in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and other ground fighting type systems. And again, unfortunately, a lot of those do have a lot of sport application. So you're learning the arm bars, you're learning positioning, you're learning all these different things, but is this where they want to be? In other words, this becomes their strength. They train for it, they begin to understand it as their strength, and they feel like, I can take this guy at the bar down, get him in an arm bar, and make this guy submit in no time. But is that where they want to be? I mean, what do you teach to people, the realities of ground fighting, as far as, do you want to be there, and what's the real truth behind ground fighting?
You know, first off, you don't never want to choose the ground. That's insane. I mean, everybody where you are, look around. There's not, you bet you can't walk 5 feet in any direction and not run into an object that would hurt. So, you know, to suggest that you're going to go and take a shot, you know, and go to the ground and start working your submissions, you know, is, or even, you know, you're better off just honestly tackling somebody doing a ground and pound. And you know what? We learned that in first grade, and we continued to do it. You know, it's the same. And look at it, like, okay, yeah, what the hell? You know, basically, what technique is that? I mean, it is, you know, somebody just taking somebody down and getting on them and beating the snot out of them. Okay, great. The other, you know, one of the things we're completely leaving out of this equation, which most people do, is, you know, the weapons issue. You know, some of the things we talk about in some of the later modules of the training system with the weapons is, you know, both offense and defense is, you know, not just a knife in your hand. I mean, you know, boot daggers, sleeve daggers, neck knives, you know, knives tucked in, edge weapons tucked in your belt. If you're concerned with this, this may be something to consider. You know, and always, you know, I say always have two, because you may not have access to, you know, one side of your body. It could be locked up. But, you know, these types of weapons concealed, you know, that's it. There's, you know, game over. And, you know, when we train in law enforcement, you know, we make them very aware of, you know, what's out there and what they have to look for. So, you know, they are, you know, it is, you know, control, you know, you wind up on the ground, you want to do everything you can to improve your position and get off the ground. Not end the fight there. If you do, bonus, but for the most part, your priority is to improve your position.
You know, this is something I was just recently thinking about too, because my initial reaction may be similar to what other people are thinking, because I've seen, I'm not sure if it was in your DVD, I know I've seen it in other DVDs, and I'm trying to think if I saw it in yours also, but where you're grappling around with somebody and showing the reality of it, and somebody, the person that is the, we assume the aggressor in the training video, pulls out a hidden knife and sticks it into you while you're wrestling around on the ground.
Yeah, that we did that in Module 3. Yeah.
Yeah, and the initial reaction, I think, for a lot of people that maybe haven't been in a fight or haven't been in a ground fight or whatever, is that, oh, come on, nobody thinks to do that. Nobody thinks to go to their secretly concealed dagger and pull it out in the middle of a fight, because everybody is so, their brain is so focused on the fight. But here's what I've, just correct me if you
sure.
think I'm wrong here, or if you have a different perspective on this, but here's what my thinking is. In watching hours and hours and hours of footage of real fights and the wrestling matches that they end up becoming, a lot of them, initially it's probably very true that the other person, let's say you're the person who's getting the tar beaten out of him on the ground, doesn't think about it. They're just like in survival mode and they're all wrapped up, but eventually it becomes kind of a hugging match. It's that rest point that you even see in the UFC fights where it's like, okay, we're both tired, and I'm going to hold on here and try and figure out, oh, my God, I'm getting the shit kicked out of me.
Yeah.
How am I going to get out of this? Oh, and at that point, when there's that little lapse of adrenaline break there, and they can think just somewhat clearly, it's like, oh, yeah, I've got a knife.
Yep,
you know,
exactly.
And it's like they're not being punched in the head. They're all wrapped up. It's like, wait a minute,
yep.
I've got a free hand. Wait a minute,
yep.
I've got a knife. What the hell am I doing getting the shit kicked out of me? I've got a knife.
You're right on the money. And that's it. When you're getting the crap kicked out of you, all you're thinking about is this. Holy crap, I'm getting the shit kicked out of me. You know, and that's the toughest thing to try to also explain to people. Is even when we do the stand-up stuff, people are like, oh, you know, your hands are down. Listen, you know, when you're attacking somebody, and this is the same for any street fight or any boxing fight or any UFC fight, if that person's getting hit and you're taking ground and you're moving forward, and, you know, they're not going to be thinking about, you know, attacking you. They're thinking about, holy crap, I got to get out of this. When you're on the ground, exactly it. There does come a rest point, because after that, you know, 30 seconds to a minute, you know, that initial rush, you know, we see this a lot of times in law enforcement, because the guys will get there and, you know, to be honest, they whatever they're learning in the academy is not effective.
Yeah.
And they wind up getting in pushing and shoving matches, and they wind up, you know, rolling around. And that's where, you know, I mean, we want to talk about the, you know, use of force report that, you know, when the, I mean, people throw statistics out, you know, that, you know, even like when they're, you know, the Gracies were, you know, the, oh, you know, 80% of the fights go to the ground or whatever they were saying. They actually pulled that from a use of force report. It wasn't entirely accurate. There was like, I think only out of all the altercations, I think it was in use of force, it was about, I think it was 30%, 25% actually wound up going to the ground. Less than 2% actually, you know, involved any type of firearms whatsoever. But what happens is these guys, you know, they get to those situations, they're trying to arrest somebody, or you're in a fight, and then that's just exactly it. You get to that point where you're like, okay, I got to catch a breath. And, you know, Module 3, we actually show, like, a couple of the holds that we use to at least take advantage of that. And then in the later modules in the Edge Weapons video, you know, you're learning, you know, okay, I'm here. Here's an opportunity. There's my sleeve. Here's my hand. You know, bang, grab it, it's out. I mean, once you start seeing that stuff, you know, it even adds more to the fact that you don't want to stay there for long, because, you know, just exactly what you said, Jeff, you know, you roll around with somebody and people are like, oh, you know, no one carries weapons like that. I'm going to say bullshit. You know, you've just been lucky, or you don't know. And people don't, because most of the people that you know don't. And I don't train for those people. I don't prepare for those people. I prepare for the worst SOB that I can imagine. Anything else ahead of that, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. You know, we talk about, you don't, it's not about, for lack of a better term, killing everybody you fight. That's not what we're about. What it's about is, once you establish dominance and you got to come in full force and do it right away, we actually call it de-escalation of force. Once you've got control and the choice is yours, then you make that decision. You know, not, having to, I mean, we'll show things where you bring things to completion, but, you know, at any time, there's going to come a point where you're going to come back in yourself and you're going to say, okay, threat is taken care of. All right, time for me to either get out of here or get help.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So yeah. Where were we? I kind of go off tangent.
No. You're all good, man. You're all good. But I'm going to backtrack myself a little here, because
okay.
I told you I had a question in here. That this is a great question. And it kind of goes back to, I'll lead into it here. This is from Brian from Northern Alberta, Canada, and he says, my question is, how do you destroy self-doubt? What I mean is, I want to be confident, and I do try, but there is still always some worry that it won't work or I'll fail. How do I stop that? I tend to give my opponent too much credit and myself very little, even if I try shaking it out of my system. As you said before, Damien, two people can train in the exact same system. They can learn all the same exact techniques, and I've seen this in combat. I mean, we have a lot of military that are members of our program as well,
mm-hmm.
and anybody that's been in combat, and I've been in combat, and it's really amazing, because you see guys who are the most hardcore Rambo, you know, charge out there with a bayonet stuck in your teeth, growling and just deflect bullets. These type of people, once the bullets really start flying, I've seen guys just go behind a car and just cry and melt.
Yep.
And I've seen guys that were total nerds, total geeks. They were there for the college money, literally pick up the bayonet, stick between their teeth, and just run out there in the battlefield and do courageous things. You'd never, ever know. And like you said, sometimes the two people can train the same way, and guys just fall apart. And while another guy can really defend himself really well. So Brian seems to be wrestling with a lot of that self-doubt in, okay, I know the techniques, I know I can try, but there's always going to be somebody maybe that can be better than me, and how do I know? How do you help destroy some of that self-doubt that when you have people come to you to train?
Well, nothing solves training like training and preparation. And, one of the barometers I use is if I know when I'm training that hard enough. Sometimes I'll have dreams where, you're in a fight and whatever you're doing is just not working. So I wake up and I'm like, okay, well, I got to get back to doing what I do. So training, repetition, and hard work replaces self-doubt. If you go harder, and this goes for anything, this goes for, you're always going to be nervous, you're always going to have an edge, you're always going to have some self-doubt, but you minimize that if you know deep down that you've done all you can. Like, if I know that I've prepared myself, and I've practiced, and I've trained as hard as I can, I know that at the end of the day, hey, I'm going to have the greatest chance that I possibly can have. And there's, I'm okay with that. And there has to be. I mean, there's high percentages and there's high percentage ways of doing things, but there are no guarantees.
Yeah.
Regardless of what anybody tells you. But
well, I think this really does come down to what you're saying, and that is, let me put it in a little bit more esoteric perspective here.
Sure.
If you know the secrets... If you know the secrets of ground fighting, then you basically can help build that confidence. And what I mean by that is, most people that are in a ground fight, or let's just say, what was it, Brian? I think, right? It doesn't matter. I mean, a lot of people are really afraid of dealing with larger attackers. I mean, this is kind of one of the biggest questions that we've always gotten, and this is why we just completed this DVD, was because people have this fear that no matter how much technique I know, if somebody's bigger than me, I'm screwed. And the reality is that the eyeball of a guy who's 6'8" is just as devastating as the eyeball of a guy who's 4'9".
Yep.
And if you know what you're doing, either stand up or on the ground, that helps breed the confidence, because you know something that most likely they do not and they're not expecting. I mean, you watch a lot of these street fights caught on tape, and when you look at them as an observer, you can see the people that are fighting. If you have any sort of training whatsoever in combatives, you can see all of the openings. Like,
yeah.
you're in a wrestling match, and like you're screaming at the screen, grab his nuts, grab his nuts, Jesus, grab his nuts. You see all this stuff. So
yeah.
So where I want to take this now, Damien, is we're on the ground. You talked. I want to bring this a little bit more into the technique phase here and help give Brian maybe some of those quote unquote secrets that maybe will allow him to look. I know if I'm on the ground, boom, 1, 2, 3. I know what to do. We're done. You talked first thing about gaining position, constantly looking to gain position. Can you explain a little bit about what that means and what is the best position that you're trying to get to?
Me on top, him on bottom.
Okay. I like how that sounds.
Yeah,
I think we know what you mean.
Fair enough. So, yeah, the position I always want to get to is I'm standing over somebody on the ground. Okay?
Okay.
So starting from the groundwork, let's look at basic positions. The absolute worst possible position you can be in is if the guy has your back. All right? If he is a good street fighter, even a halfway decent fighter, he will end you very quickly. I mean, striking the back of the neck, striking the back of the base of the skull, game over, you're done. So you need to turn around as quickly as possible and face him. At least now you've got your hand, if you're in a mount, you've got your hands to protect yourself. We do, there's a cover that we do just, to get us, so we can stop, everything that we do from here is, okay, what's my best possible chance from this position? And it's all based on that. It's, the thing you have to be careful of, and this is the largest misconception with any of this stuff, is like, okay, if I'm here, I know this technique, and I can beat anybody from this position. That's false. And anyone who tells you that is either misinformed or not really telling you the truth. If you're on the ground and he's over you. I mean, we do a particular cover where, you know, bracing your hand. First of all, you're tucking your chin and keeping your head off the ground. You're bracing your, let's just say, your left hand will come across your head, braced on your shoulder, and you tuck your chin behind it so that all he is your elbow to look at, and then the other arm comes underneath. So basically, you want to protect your throat and your face and your head, give him the top of your head and your elbows and your forearms and the hard things to hit. And then we just start moving, we just rock back and forth, and then we come out and start hitting with edge of hand and heel of hands immediately. That's only, the cover is only to give you a split second to regroup if you need it. And if you have it, again, of course, if you're knocked out, well, you're knocked out. And you're really not worrying about anything anymore. So from that position, you know, we do things like, a hip buck to get somebody off just so they can brace their hands. And we've been fairly successful with even having, 120-pound women and 200-pound guys, at least getting the guys to put a hand down so that they can, so that it's all about stopping the attack. So if you get them, as soon as you get them to pause, that's your opportunity. And then coming in with a reverse Japanese strangle, I know, it's tough when we're,
I know.
This is a hell of a visual, but, locking into that position, exploiting the eyes just in hopes that worst case scenario, for you, they back off and try to get the hell away from you. Best case scenario, you do take the eye and cause some shock and, congratulations. But if they do back off, that's the opportunity to, shrimp out, put your feet in between you and him and use your feet and start kicking heels. And we make sure that we do them in a churning motion, not both at the same time. Because, you want to have one leg back, at least something there if it is grabbed. And, at that point, it's a scramble. You're getting back up on your feet. So we go from, somebody, on top of us, ground and pound situation where we cover and we get them to just stop hitting us for a second so we can look to improve our position by either hooking the back of the head with that reverse strangle, or, even shrimping out right away from that. I mean, it's not, everything's not, there's positions that are A, B, and C, but,
yeah.
You may go from A to C to B to A, you're moving back and forth, and it's a fight, and what you're doing is just taking any little piece, every inch, every fraction, and just, building on that, and then when you can, you take larger pieces and larger chunks. Once you're out, or once you get a break, and that's where a lot of you're going to grab somebody. You may not end up, you grab somebody in their genitals, or you grab their eye, or hook their ear. You may not end it, but you'll get a reaction out of them. Even something as simple as taking your knuckle and driving into their rib cage if you are locked up. In a sport, competition or in the training setting, you're going to know that's the guy's knuckle, right? So, you might not get a reaction. But, in a fight, you really don't know what that is. So, you're going to be ultra-sensitive to it. You're going to look to it. And even something like that, as long as it gives them a little pause and enough opportunity, you can parlay that into something larger. So little bits and little pieces, and then to get to that better position.
Yeah. Okay, and then let's talk about some of the most effective strikes when somebody's on the ground. I mean, typically,
yeah.
People just go for they just start swinging away, trying to get at the head, trying to get the position where they can strike somebody. If somebody's on the ground, often you just see them kind of wailing away at the rib cage, and when you see these things really happen, there's very little that is actually done. There's very little damage that's actually done. What are some of the strikes that a lot of people may be missing because they're not even thinking about it that really are the most devastating types of targets and different strikes to use in a ground fighting situation?
The same can be applied to really anything from the bottom position. I mean, you basically got, heel hand, edge of hand from the bottom, striking into the chin, striking into the face, edge of hand, of course, the side of the neck, the throat, anywhere above the collarbone area is gonna, you know, is gonna give you that type of the effect that you want. We stay away from the body just for the reasons you said, Jeff. I mean, you know, it's, you know, striking the body, is, especially depending on the area you live in, it takes more skill, more training, and even with jackets and sweatshirts, those blows get muted. They don't have a, you know, tremendous amount of stopping power. I mean, we spend a lot of time, you know, hitting, you know, makawaras to give us good reverse punches and good body blows. For that, you know, for basic, you know, close quarters combat, you don't need it. In those instances, you maybe be using, you know, things like, you know, just like boot kicks and keeping people away on the ground from the top position. Of course, edge of hand, heel of hand. We stay away from fists, primarily because we don't wear wraps and gloves. And if you're not conditioning your hands, there's a very, very real chance that you're going to be busting your knuckle. You can use hammer fists, of course. That's still the edge of the hand. Then you've got the heel of hand. There's a couple different components with that. Elbows are always good. We do things like, and not even, you know, just focusing on the head, even if you're back and if a guy's in like a closed guard or even an open guard, hacking inside the thighs, and then we can't punch right into the testicles, right into the fork when you're on top of them. And then you're literally working up his body. If you're locked up, there's another technique we do. It's called the chest smear, where you're literally just smashing your face on his chest, and that bangs his head off the ground. Moving up the body, you know, as you're moving into a mount position, you'd be driving your knees anywhere along the line. Knees, elbows, hack, hack, hack. And then when we finally get to the final mount position, you know, and everything depends on how much injury you've caused, okay, and what his reaction is. So if, you know, you don't go from one position to the other, and the thing is, your instinct's going to tell you can or not. You know, your instinct's going to train you to, you know, react accordingly. I mean, like I said at the beginning, you can't train for specific situations. You can only train for distance of position. Specific situations, there are thousands. You know, he's this, I do this. He's that, I do that. But if you train in a way that just teaches you to take advantage of specific target areas while you look to improve your position, be that's on the feet or on the ground, you know, that's what's going to give you the greatest success. I think the biggest mistake that we all have made is that we try to, you know, think of every particular situation and every move with a counter. You know, that, you know, you can counter with position, you can counter with pressure. In sport applications, you know, there's definitely, you know, specific ways to get out of things. But there are still, even those are limited, because it's always funny. I always love that when people ask, oh, what's a counter to a strangle? I'm like, I'll use what Yaneska told me, my judo instructor. He said, don't get in it. You know, it's somebody knows. I mean, there are, you know, pulling on the elbow, tucking your chin in into the arm, definite ways and things to do to relieve the pressure if the guy on you screwed up. If the guy on your back screwed up, okay, you know, this is what we do. But if somebody has got you in a strangle and knows how to strangle, it's lights out.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, I mean, guys, like, how do you get a rear naked choke? Tap? You know, I'm like, if the guy knows what he's doing. I mean, there's a couple basic things, but other than that, so, you know, you really need to, you know, focus on practicing in a way that just makes you, you know, just focus on developing your weapons first. Develop a good strike. Develop a good, you know, work in all the offensive parts of your anatomy. Condition yourself, and then, you know, work on, okay, I know from this position I want to get to here, I want to get to here, I want to get to here. I'm going to use whatever means necessary that I can to get there. And,
yeah,
you know, tactically we're talking about it, you know, if you're, you know, if that, it, you know, the choice is yours. I present the facts. You pick and choose. You know, this is your best bet. This is your least bet. You know, your worst bet. So, and you know, the first thing I tell people is that, you know, hand-to-hand combat in the world of close-quarters combat is the lowest rung on the ladder. Like, if it was all it was cracked up to be, we wouldn't have technology. We wouldn't have knives. We wouldn't have guns. We wouldn't have blackjacks. We wouldn't have batons. We wouldn't have tasers. We wouldn't have pepper spray. We wouldn't have any of these things. So think in those terms. Good hand-to-hand is technically, you know, it shouldn't, you know, whether you've got a weapon in your hand or not, it should, you know, the kinetics are all the same, and they should all work together. So knowing this and preparing yourself, you know, as a, you know, say, 105-pound woman as opposed to a 300-pound man, you know, you may want to explore other tools at your disposal, you know, in order to ensure your safety.
That's a good point.
You know, if there's, you know, and one of the largest concerns is like, well, is it illegal to carry it? Okay. Yes, you know, edge weapons. In fact, we're coming up with a new resource site, which is next month, which is going to have, you know, everything from, you know, self-defense laws from state to state to manuals, all kinds of stuff. Yes, you know, it depends how you manifest a weapon, depends on your state. The next question I ask is like, okay, when's the last time you got frisked? When's the last time, you know, your car got tossed? When was the last time you were arrested? Oh, well, I don't get arrested. Of course you don't. You know, so, you know, if you, and if any of the guys that know law enforcement, if, you know, they have never taken pepper spray off a woman, off anybody who was, you know, just at a routine traffic stop. No. If it was somebody who was messing around or it was an assault-related activity or robbery-related activity, yeah, they're taking it. Oh, yeah. And if it's a teenage kid, yeah, it's getting lifted. I mean, you know, some of these kids, you know, get pretty creative with what they do in a woodshop. But, you know, the, but for the most part, you know, be informed, be smart. You're, you know, using those types, and this is what we do in the training system, is, you know, using those types of, listen, we all want to, first, most of us, we don't want to hurt anybody. You know, nobody wants to do these things. But then, unfortunately, it happens where, you know, you wind up in the wrong place at the wrong time, and, you know, you're going to have to make some decisions. And that can happen to anybody.
Yeah.
So at least now, you know, you have a way to prepare yourself. And what's interesting with, you know, with regards to physical training as it relates to mental preparation and prevention is that they go hand in hand. The more physical training you do, the more preparedness training you go through, the more aware you become and the more sensitive you become to certain things. Fact. So, you know, even the mere, you know, the mere act of you, you know, practicing and doing something starts to, you know, create awareness and give you an edge. I mean, just the fact that you're, you know, you got your pepper spray in your hand. You got a personal alarm. I mean, you've got, you know, your, you know, an edged, you know, utility knives. You know, I just, you know, just thinking, I mean, that, you know, puts you in a state of mind that gives you an edge. And, you know, for basic primary self-defense, especially, you know, in the beginning, it's all about, you know, we like to use the two campers in the woods joke where, you know, they see a bear and the bear's running at him, and one friend starts to put on shoes, and he's like, hey, man, one of the friends says, man, you'll never outrun that bear. Another friend looks at him and says, man, I'll have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, let him go to the other, you know, the other people, because, you know, when we're dealing with criminals, not bar brawls. I mean, bar brawls are, you know, puffed up and a little different. But even then, still, you know, we're animals at our core, so nobody ever picked a fight that they wanted to lose. Nobody ever picked a mark that says, you know what, that guy looks like he's going to kick the crap out of me. I'll be back in 10. You know, it just doesn't happen like that. So, you know, the confidence that comes from actually doing something, you know, pays off with a lot of times without you even knowing it. just because you look like you've, you know, you carry yourself differently. And, you know, when, you know, we're, you know, and that goes from, you know, again, the bar fight to, you know, somebody in a parking lot watching you look for, you know, go to your car. You know, if you look like you're not distracted, you look like you're together, you know, then, you know what, maybe I'll just take the next one.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we covered a lot of stuff there, Damien.
Yeah, I know, man.
We started off with some very effective strikes.
Yes.
And led into, don't, and I think, if I can summarize a few of the points along the way. one of them was, look, as self-protectionists, hand-to-hand combat is the lowest rung, that don't discount the use of additional weapons that you can use for self-protection, whether that's pepper spray, whether that's whatever that may be. There, you can get very, very creative in how you do this. And one of the things I liked about what you said was, and I don't know if you actually said it this way or not, but as you were talking, was just having something on your person actually makes you more aware, because you're aware that you have that. When I travel internationally, I carry a small knife with me. Having that knife makes me more aware of my surroundings. It just, you know, it's just something like some sort of a subconscious trigger that if you somehow put it on you, it like triggers something subconsciously to say, there must be a reason why this guy is wearing this, me being the guy, and I'm more aware. So I really like that. One of the things you brought up about training, when we were talking about positioning, I really liked, and that was that you really have to look at the different positions and training in different positions. It's not just a matter of, okay, training partner, you get in the mount this time. Okay, now it's my turn, I get in the mount. That you have, you, when you were talking about your response and the targets up the body, that you might be coming from a position that isn't very conducive to you winning the fight, and that you have to look at your targets all the way up. And everybody that's out there, you can train with this, whether it's with a heavy bag, a mannequin, or a partner. Yep. You can train from different positions. Train from, like, where you're down basically at his feet, and now you have to get up toward the head and learn what targets are all the way from the feet all the way up to the head and work your way up there. You brought up some really great points along the way there, Damien. We don't have a lot of time left. I want to get to a few of these questions that are a little bit more, they're a little bit more, scenario specific. One just came in from Steve from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He says, if a person demands your wallet or cell phone, should you hand it to them with your non-preferred hand so that you can strike with your strong hand while the perp is looking at the wallet or cell phone? Where should you strike first? This is an interesting question. Let me read this again, because there's a there's almost some code in here. Like, I don't know. If a person demands your wallet or cell phone, should you hand it to them with your non-preferred hand so you can strike with your strong hand while the perp is looking at your wallet or cell phone? Where would you strike first?
Okay, first, Steve, you know, we will discourage any type of physical acts against any other
Thank
person.
You.
Sorry,
thank you. I mean, that's where I was hoping you were going to take it there, because as I read this twice, that is an interesting way that he put it.
And there's, you know, and then that's to everybody else who will be listening to this, and to Steve, you know, your choice, you know, we talk about tactics, we talk about training, and that's it. Same as firearms training. You have you're training to shoot, and that's it. This is how you fire your weapon. This is how you holster. This is how you draw. This is how you move. This is how you cover. Same thing. This is not about when to shoot the weapon. So I don't ever tell anybody what they should fight over or not fight over. So if it is your wallet, your cell phone, you don't want to hand it over, then that's up to you, and that's fine. And I think you've got rights to do certain things. You know, we have to be careful. We talk about use of force. But just as an aside, if you're in a situation where you felt that your life was threatened and that you thought that this person had ability and had communicated intent, then I would say you would. That to answer specifically the question, finally, is to you always use your strong hand. you know, most, and it depends what you're going to be comfortable with. The old adage is lead with speed, follow with power. But in the street, you know, power is king. So, you know, getting back to what we said before, the speed takes away the little pieces, creates, you know, creates injury, creates opening for much larger, much more powerful techniques. Now, in case we used to, you know, train a, you know, if you had a fake, you know, money clip, or even a money clip, and you just held the money clip out, or put the money clip down, people's eyes go right to that thing. And so as they're distracted, there's your opportunity. You know, and then it's, you know, literally, you know, heel, hand, edge, hand, take ground, move forward, and do what you have to do. So, and you're focusing all your, like we talked about before, you don't want to go to the body, you know, just go right above the collarbone area. And, you know, that's anywhere from the neck up, start there, and, you know, keep going. And you always assault, you know, you always practice, we train, target, let's just say target areas, but not specific targets, meaning, you know, we train silhouette training. So it's like, you know, the body, the head, I'm not worried about if I hit him in a pressure point here, if I hit him in a there. No, it's like, I know my highest percentage is going to be anywhere above the collarbone and any of the lower extremities. So anywhere below the, you know, knee down, of course, the fork or the testicles, and, you know, that's it. I mean, there's auxiliary points as well, but those are the places that we focus to disrupt, we want to disrupt this momentum and balance, and those are the two places to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it really becomes a personal choice, but no matter how much training you have, you've got to be aware. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if they demand your wallet, give it to them. And you brought up a really good point about like a dummy wallet. And I think a lot of people haven't really even thought of that. And that's something that I started doing years ago, which was taking, you know, some old expired credit cards, throwing in a few $1 bills into a wallet. And then if somebody asks for your wallet, give it to them. You lost $2 and some expired credit cards.
Exactly.
If they say, give me your wallet, you give them the wallet, and then they say, okay, now get in the trunk of your car. Then you're in a whole different story here, yeah.
Thank you, yeah.
Great points, great points.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, I don't want to. You'll get me started about never leaving an area. So, yeah, I'm going
to
shut up.
All right, well, let's move on to the trunk of the car here, because I've got an email here. This is kind of a new one from Jorge Gonzalez from Mexico City,
mm-hmm.
And I've been to Mexico City. Man, that's like a training zone extraordinaire for a close.
You know, I spent time in Costa Rica and Guatemala when I was working with a coffee company, and yeah, it's interesting. Was it carjacking and kidnapping? Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's right from Mexico City, and. He says, we're the number one place in the world concerning kidnappings and carjackings. I'd like to know if you could provide me with some points, aside from being aware, about what to do in such violent situations to avoid being taken as hostage for ransom. Do you have any plans to produce a DVD about how to handle this kind of attacks in the near future, or do you provide a course of instruction at your school? Look forward to hearing about your answer to the above questions. This seems like it's more like, hey, are you going to have a product for this?
Well, we do. You know, in the training system, Module 5 covers all that, escape and evasion. So, like, the training system is the core of that, is your close combat training. That's it. I mean, the other things that we may come out with are just specifically how to apply those basic knowledge and tactics to specific scenarios. Like, we'll do, you know, some arresting and some controlling techniques with it. But other than that, if, like, you need... You know, it's like, you know, you need your undergrad degree, you know, so this is it. I mean, Module 5, we deal specifically, and the reason why it's in Module 5 is because if I led with it, you know, most people really wanted to get into, okay, how do I knock a guy out? So, you know what, in the first one, you're going to find out.
Yeah.
Module 5, escape and evasion, just tweaks it a little bit where you want to limit your... you want to remain mobile, and you want to limit your body weight that you commit. So you start things with, like, you know, finger darts to the eyes. I mean, you'll see these types of techniques, I mean, in other systems, you know, and what we call, like, a leg whip or, like, a front kick. I mean, everything that – I mean, it is the least amount of – you know, the most amount of contact with the least amount of body commitment and the most distance between you and your assailant. And then it is, you know, just – remaining mobile. You know, your intention is after you, you know, after they pause, you run. You know, after, you know, you need to put as much distance between them, you know, you and them as possible. And just like whether we talked about with the car, with the wallet, I mean, it's interesting. And, you know, in Guatemala, they actually not only, you know, take people for ransom, but they will kidnap your car and then ransom it back to you. So, you know, there were armed guards that would actually just sit there and watch the cars.
Yeah.
So the using those types of methods and training with that intention of I'm getting out of here. I mean, this is like the first thing we teach somebody who comes in as a civilian and wants to learn how do I protect myself. Well, the first thing we're going to teach you is how to get away from anybody. And you know, if you given the opportunity that somebody's there, I mean, you'll be able to get away. You will, because three things that, you know, criminals across the board fear. You know, obviously they don't want to get caught, they don't want to get identified, and they don't want to get injured. So the longer you prolong this, and the way that you do that is through distance, the more opportunity those three bad things for criminals can happen to them. You know, so if you're, you know, going to your car, and then you decide to, and they decide to kidnap you, you know, the longer it takes them, the more exposed they are. So the more likely they are to break off. Now, if somebody has particular intent on grabbing you, you know, then it's, you know, random things are random things. But the more, you know, the more they know about you, the more intel they have, and it could be from somebody who, you know, same goes for people robbing a house. You know, it's all a risk-reward proposition. So if they feel that if you're a specific target, you know, hopefully because you're a specific target, you're taking remedies to protect yourself against that, and that those remedies are security-based. If it is more of a random occurrence where you have a nice car and you look like you'd be a good target, then it's less likely that they're going to, you know, prolong the attack.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like somebody wants, you know, Damien Ross or Jeff Anderson, and that's who's on my shopping list. Well, you know, you've got some problems, you know, more problems than, you know, that random attempt.
Yeah. Well, it's good to know that you've got an actual DVD for that. Not a lot of people have that level of training and realize that is a threat for some people. Good stuff.
Yep.
I got a question here from Ben from Gilbert, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I am a left below knee amputee who's currently in poor physical condition. I've started working out, though. He has that in parentheses. I've started working out. So I guess he was waiting for the lecture, like, hey, Ben, you need to get off your ass and go get in better condition.
Yeah.
But anyway, he goes on, it occurred to me that in a street situation, a person or persons would take advantage of my condition and put me on the ground ASAP and then attempt to do what they will. My question is, are there systems or which systems would you recommend for effective ground fighting techniques and or systems for my situation?
His name's Ben?
Ben, yeah.
Okay, Ben, never ask a barber if you need a haircut. So I'm going to say my system. But seriously, first, you know, the better physical condition you're in, the more punishment you can take, and the better off you're going to be. My college coach, Thad Turner, said, he's like, hey, any knucklehead can get in condition. It just takes a will and a desire to do it. So, you know, we do, you know, we've got, I know, Jeff's got some, you know, plenty of stuff, you know, in the training modules. Just the mere fact that you're working out alone is conditioning. You know, you'll be, you know, module one, you'll start to be able to do something. Being in your condition, and this is what I just had a conversation with another guy, and this can go under the guise of, you know, the topic of training while injured. You have to understand how you're going to, you know, how you're going to operate and how you're going to move. This particular person, you know, had a compound fracture of the leg, so they're like, okay, what do I do? Well, let's practice, you know, the stuff in module nine with the weapons, with doing some crossbar smashes with the crutch, doing some butt strokes and thrusts, and then feel how it is, what your balance is and what your limitations are. Because, You know, and that's what, you know, training exposes and training helps you do it when you're actually doing something physical. That'll, you know, that will do it. I mean, I know Ben's probably thinking, well, you know, I'm going to be, you know, on the ground, maybe shoot some ground fighting. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, just like the ground fighting we discussed, not necessarily the grappling, because you're going to be very, you know, disappointed in what you're going to get and the results, and you're going to get, you know, frustrated when, in fact, you just want to end the fight by any means possible and use what's tactically, you know, what gives you the tactical advantage. And, you know, once you start training in that, you know, mindset, you know, then everything becomes clear to you. You know, it's like, okay, I don't have a knife, but wow, look, there's a rock. You know, I mean, you're starting to think of, like, what can I use here to, you know, gain the advantage, instead of being, you know, stuck into, you know, a system and a style that is, you know, surrounded by rules. When, you know, and or culture, there's, you know, what makes what we do unique is that, you know, we're doing whatever it takes, right? You know, regardless of, you know, regardless of anything. So, you know, any program that, you know, you choose, and that's what, you know, use the training system, is that it, from day one, you're, you know, okay, I understand, you know, from this position, this is what's available to me. From that position, this is what's available to me, and so on. So, once you practice to be resourceful, and you have that, and you start developing, you know, once you start hitting things and start training, you're gonna, you know, get some confidence, and you're gonna see automatically where things plug in to what you need to do. And also, getting back to what we said before about, you know, maybe using some technology that has been proven in close quarter situations.
Good point.
To work. I mean, you know, easiest thing is like, hey, you know, I mean, we always go back to pepper spray and personal arms and things like that. And you know what? They're there. You know, they will instantly give you an edge and cause problems for who's attacking you. And even if it's, you know, pepper spray doesn't work on everybody, it doesn't technically have to work. It just has to distract them long enough for you to make an escape. So, you know, that's that. And in the meantime, and that's where, you know, your training starts with, you know, okay, I'm being aware of this and I'm starting to work on this now, and I'm going to be start building my, you know, defense program, which is going to include technology, going to include empty hand methods, and, you know, obviously, and that creates awareness and gives me my, you know, street smarts, if you will.
Yeah. Well, and was something I nobody's ever said before when it came to conditioning that you brought up that I want to make sure everybody heard there, because a lot of people say, well, you know, why should I work out when I'm supposed to defeat this guy in 5 to 10 seconds anyway? I'm not in a match here. Why do I really need to be conditioned? And something you said really stuck out there, which is, the more in shape you are, the more punishment you can withstand, and the more punishment you can deliver. And that's something a lot of people really don't think about, is that if you are in shape, your muscles are tight, somebody goes to punch you in the stomach, you know, if you're Homer Simpson, you know, eating donuts and drinking beer, watching television all the time, you get punched in the stomach or something like that, you're not going to be able to withstand that kind of punishment as much as somebody who actually is doing a few crunches here and there. So some great tips there. Hey, Damon, I know we're running a little bit late. I got one last question here, which I think is a short one here, and then we'll tie up here. And this is from Barbara from Florida. She says, I know a female who is missing an arm, and I'm a female interested in learning about self-defense. How can we train together and learn?
Okay. First, again, I'll go back to plugging my own program, the self-defense training system. But it's going to give you all the instructional and all the drills. And of course, there's a manual that comes with each module. I mean, what makes what we do unique is that we're providing you not just a technique, we're providing you with specific ways how to develop this technique and how to train it, you know, without a training partner. We do have guys that are obviously using, you know, training in groups, which is great, and it makes, you know, what you're doing easier for motivation purposes. Your friend's missing an arm, you know, tragic, but, you know, not the end. The sad part
is... Well, that can apply to anybody, because anybody can have both arms, and then you get it broken in a fight, or, like you said.
Exactly.
I mean, and something you said initially, in the very beginning of our conversation, which I thought was really profound as well, was... When you're in a ground fight, somebody goes to take you down, it's not like they're dropping you down in a 2 foot square of real estate that you have in the middle of the barroom floor. Most likely it's, you know, 10 feet away and it's over a table or over a chair, and and you can get hurt along the way. So, you know, you could very easily be that person that only has one arm to work with.
Yep. And that dealing with that comes from practice. It comes from training.
Yeah.
And just like with the injury that we talked about before, you know, training while injured, you know, training with a disability, you have to know how to deal with it. You have to take stock of your tools, and that only comes through practice.
Yeah.
Well, now you've got, you know, this is, you know, I keep that arm in front, and then I go to work. And then I use the other tools around me. I mean, unfortunately, when you do have a visible disability, you do become more susceptible, and you do become more... more attractive, to be a target. That's, you know, when we're injured, we're sick, we're older. The times when we should, you know, it's, you know, predators pick, you know, what they feel is going to be the easiest score, or the risk versus reward. You know, maybe easy to, you know, maybe look like somebody easy to roll. Maybe I walk away with, you know, $20, $50, whatever. But That being said, you know, when you're practicing and you're training, you know, you're going to automatically figure out. I mean, she's been living without the arm. She does a lot of things successful with one arm. This is going to be no different. You know, once you start working and, you know, training together, you know, hitting the training dummy, and, you know, it's going to be, you know, you're going to know right away. I mean, there's things, like, if it's like a single wrist grab, you know, she just may go right to a, you know, we call it a shoulder drop, right into the target. And then, you know, if she can move her feet, but what happens is, and this is why, you know, one of the things that, you know, I just want to touch on before I end this, is that, you know, using your feet, it's not as easy in close quarters as you think, especially when you're in grabs and hold situations, or you're trying to move and run, because you need your feet to keep your balance and to keep the move. So, you know, the kicking is, you know, limited to, you know, we do convulsive footwork, which is stomping and driving your knees, but that is just exactly how you're going to be moving. So, you know, you will be able to, you know, see, you know, when you're training exactly, you know, how you're going to be able to do this, how this is going to come off, and you're going to be shocked at, you know, how much power you can kind of generate.
Yeah, great stuff. Damien, this has been incredible, man. We covered a lot
Thank
of ground
so
here, a lot of really great actionable tips for everybody out there. I got to put a serious plug in here for Damien's modules. We talked about, I mean, you've heard a few numbers come up here. Module 5, this covers the whole gamut of close quarters combat, all the way up to, as we found out, escape and evasion, which a lot of people don't even know. They don't even know how to work in that zone. So there's some really great stuff in there. Definitely head on over to Damien's website at selfdefensetrainingsystem.com and go check out his stuff. It's really, really great stuff. And like you said, he's put a lot of work into it to include manuals that come with the DVDs. So really great stuff. Damien, again, thank you for taking a little bit of extra time here. I know we went a little bit long, but great stuff, man.
Not a problem.
Okay, everybody, until the next Street Survival webinar session, train hard and stay safe.